Welcome to the Great American Collectible Show, seen Wednesdays on the Sports Collectors Daily Facebook page and the Great American Collectibles Facebook page. You can also listen to us on iHeartRadio, Pandora, and Spotify. The Great American Collectibles Show is brought to you by the National Sports Collectors Convention and Sports Collectors Daily. Tonight's headlines are brought to you by Sports Collectors Daily. For all your hobby news, features, and more, go to sportscollectorsdaily.com. And now your host, Tom Zappala, and Red Sox Hall of Famer, Rico Petrocelli.
Tom, how you feeling? Good, Rico. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, I asked you before.
No, you didn't. I had to ask you to ask me.
Did I ask you last week?
You did.
Well, who do you want?
I'm better.
Yeah, I'm good. No, he's had some real serious back problems.
Listen, if anybody out there ever herniates two discs,
that's
just hit the bed. That's all I can say.
Well, you know, it's for your age, it's not
it's
too
been
bad.
Absolutely brutal, but I'm on the mend.
You are, huh?
Yeah. Ellen gives me a massage every day.
Wow.
Pretty good.
You're not kidding.
Welcome to the Great American Collectible Show. Tom Zappala,
yes.
Red Sox Hall of Famer, my paisan, Rico Petrocelli. We have a special guest in the house with us, Matt Graney from My Slabs. Matt is a local businessman here now, yep. And actually... a little backstory. Matt played Little League with my son and was one hell of a... You used to scare the crap out of the kids facing you.
That's right.
Because you were so tall and you had that fastball. And then you did very well in high school too. So Matt owns a company called My Slabs. And he's going to come into the fabric of our conversation with our guest host, our good friend, Brian Drent from Mile High Card Company. But first... our other two good friends, Beauty and the Beast. No, I'm just kidding. Chuck and Stacy Wisner. How you guys doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, good, good. First of all, and by the way, Brian, jump in. Matt, jump in. This is a free-for-all. Tell us about the success of your February auction, first of all. I kind of went online, and you guys really did have a pretty good auction there.
Yeah, and like most auctions, it's a good mix of old and new. So we're getting consignments across the board from the more recent stuff to the old stuff. And it's good to have things that are popular. Like this auction that just is live now, one of the hottest athletes out there is Caitlin Clark in the last couple months. Great story. And have a couple of her really rare rookie cards, including an autographed patch rookie. So it's good to have things that, kind of seasonally get hot or might be a new prospect that could be a long-term investment, you know?
You know, it's amazing what's going on with the women's basketball because of her.
Because of her, and if they allow her to play like she can, because that's a tight group, that group of women, by the way.
Yeah.
And they can get tough.
Did you see what her salary was?
Yeah, $300,000.
For four years. $76,000 a year.
That's it.
That's what she gets.
Pretty good deal.
Yeah, but the endorsements, I think, will add up a little bit. Brian, have you seen any Caitlin cards yet?
Yeah, I've been to some shows and seen – I saw one guy had a full case full of Caitlin Clark. I got to admit, I'm a huge basketball fan, grew up playing basketball, played in high school and then a little bit in college. And then, but I'll tell you, I've never really been a fan of the women's game. It's just not the same as the guys' game. That said, I was captivated by Caitlin Clark and to even a greater degree – Or the same degree, the South Carolina team, so it seems to me that the women's game, especially in college, is outpacing the men's game just because so many of the guys leave after a year and there's no stars, so to speak. And the women's game, they stay 3 or 4 years, so they become stars.
Right. I couldn't agree more with you. Hey, so Chuck and Stace, when is your next auction?
So we opened for bidding this past Sunday evening, and bidding will continue for 5 weeks. We're running this one for 5 weeks. So this particular auction is going to start closing on May 19th at 7 p.m. But we are open and ready for bids.
How many auctions are you guys doing a year now?
You know, I would say we average 4 to 5. You know, we put a lot into each one. We really try and really focus on making each one as high quality as possible. And right now we've kind of found that 4 to 5 a year is kind of a good number for us.
You know, I was commenting prior to you coming on the show. About you didn't have a question.
All right.
Did you have a question?
Excuse me.
Did you have a question?
I just wanted to ask them if they actually, but I too both. Do you have regular consigners? You know what I mean?
We have regular consigners, but then every auction there's always new people to help. I'd call it. Could be, you know, like in this auction just went live. You know, my guess is we probably have over 30 consigners. Some of them are families that somebody might have passed away, or somebody's getting into retirement and is finally ready to sell their collection. And we help them through the process, figure out what to grade. And then having our store business has never been busier. So that's where, you know, somebody actually pulled this Caitlin Clark, if you can see it.
Yeah.
It's an autographed patch rookie of her. So a lot of it is also store customers. Some people might just get a great pull out of a pack of cards or box of cards and consign that one, two, or three items that they get that are higher end.
Does anybody ever walk into the store with, I don't know, a collection, and you buy it directly from them?
Sometimes. I usually will tell them, you know, hey, your best bet is to have us get this graded, put it in auction. You know, one story I always remember years ago, and a nice woman probably in her 80s came in and said her husband passed 3 years prior, and she was finally ready to sell his favorite card, which was a Sandy Koufax rookie. Mm. And she said he paid $300 for it. That's all she was asking. And I said, ma'am, you know, I'd love to buy that for $300, but unless my eye's missing something, it looks beautiful, it should grade very well. Let's get it graded, put it in auction. I think it might have came back a 7, and she ended up with a check for $4,000 maybe, instead of just selling it. So a lot of times we might direct them that route. Now, sometimes people are looking for the money right away.
Right.
So once in a while we might buy it, but a lot of times we're just, you know, telling them that their best bet isn't to let somebody like me or somebody else buy it, but let's get people to bid against each other.
Have you guys ever done a live / internet auction? In other words, an auction right at the store, and it's on the internet also.
So in our very early days, we did do that. So back, 2013, 2014, we used to have a facility that we would set up at, and we would have a live bidding audience, and then we would also sell live simulcast on two different bidding platforms as well. So we did that for a handful of years. I think what we found is we kind of got to a point where the online bidders made it really difficult for the live bidders to compete. And so at that point, then we made the transition to all online.
Yeah.
And Stacey can do the big con, but she doesn't like to do it, you know?
I'm out of practice. It's been a lot of years.
How is the new setup working?
Great. I mean, here in our new location, we love it here. I mean, I think anytime you go through a change, it's a little scary. I don't, now looking back, we don't know why we waited so long.
Man, you guys, it's a state of the art. It's really state of the art the way you guys have built it. I saw it. I don't know. You had a video on it. It was like, wow, I could not believe it. It's certainly not your run of the mill card shop. Let's put it that way.
I think it's really exciting. And I think the feedback that we get from people when they come here is very similar. It's not like your typical card shop. It's not what you would typically expect when you're heading into a sports card show. And I think that helps it work hand in hand with the auction.
You and I should open up a card shop. Wait a minute. Coffee area, and people can also
bagels
and also do some, you know, their computer stuff. So keep them in there, and then hopefully they'll buy. It's like a
I'm not interested.
Okay.
All right. So a couple of the highlights before we let you guys go. A couple of the highlights of the auction.
You know, sets include the 54 tops, 56 tops. One of my favorite items that you don't see much is the Mickey Mantle Wheaties rookie. You know, this is from 1951.
Wow, very cool.
And nice. As you know, like type 1 photos have gotten so popular. I mean, this is a 1951 Mickey Mantle. That is, I'll hold it up again, just a classic pose that was used for
great.
A few that's cards a great and images. You know?
What's the bidding at right now on that? Do you know?
I mean, we just went live.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah.
Any predictions on that particular piece?
You know, probably 5,000-6,000, but, you know, really, it's I see it so infrequently, it could go as high as 10,000 maybe. Beautiful. Who knows? It's graded a PSA 5.
That's awesome. Exclusive, right?
Yeah, that's
are
it.
There others? I mean, no others have been found.
I have a Type 1 Rico film photo.
Was I talking to him?
I do.
I think no. So.
I have that Type 1 photo of you holding Joe Pepitone's wig.
Wig? All right. That's a wise guy. No, but...
Yeah, right? Rico, since it was a Wheaties exclusive, you know, a lot of them would have gotten messed up because it's larger than a card. It's more of a photo stock, so...
Yeah.
I think this was the one you had to send away for.
Okay.
So there's not many out there. I mean, I rarely see it.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
Your website address?
www.wheatlandauctionservices.com.
Fantastic.
And on Hotwood Now, bidding is open. We'll continue through May 19th. Oh,
and we will see terrific. You guys at the National. Looking forward to it. And I'll PM you on that subject we talked about.
We need to get you guys down here in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Great place to visit.
You know something? He is so lazy. It's
ridiculous. Wait a minute. I got relatives in Harrisburg. I got relatives in Monroeville, right near Pittsburgh.
Can we stay at their house?
Yeah. Scranton, Pennsylvania. What's something just happened?
Love to come down there. Seriously.
Yeah.
Come on down. Visit your relatives in Harrisburg. That's what's close to us. You're about 30 minutes away.
All right, guys. Take Beautiful. Care. We'll see you.
Have a great day. Thanks a lot.
Chuck and Stacy Wisman, good people. Good
great people. Huh?
Yeah. Good we'll go visit them at the National.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. You know? Yep. Yeah. So that's terrific. It's always exciting, you know, when you have something new.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they're basically pretty much expanding, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I tell you, it's a really beautiful, beautiful facility. All right. Let's get to our good friend, Brian Drent from Mile High Card Company. Brian, you know, I went back. I'm going to pull. I started looking at old GAX shows from the last 8.5 years, man. And sure. There's some great ones, man. You have been with us. You know, there's a handful of you guys that have been with us since day one. You, JP, you know, Hef, you know who the guys are. And
yes.
It's amazing how much younger we all looked.
Oh, you look great. Oh, you look good. Nice. Your goatee.
All right, listen. First of all, congratulations on your last auction. I have the catalog here. And by the way, you know, with all due respect, I just got the catalog about 5 days ago, just so you want to talk to your post office. But great, great catalog. Tell us about the 1997 Metal Universe Michael Jordan.
Yeah, that was it's one of the premier cards from the modern era. It really has become a pinnacle type card. And we got 27 bids on the card. It finished at $303,842. So just shy of $304,000. Great backstory. The guy that consigned it really wasn't a collector per se. He had bought some cards in the 90s as a younger person. Him and his buddy went to a card shop. They kind of discussed, hey, whatever we get, you want to split. His buddy tells him, hey, I think I'm just going to go alone on this and let's just go our you know, separately. And so they open their packs. Our consigner gets this card and his friend says, hey, what are we going to do with it? You know, so immediately he said, well, 2 minutes ago, you were going your own separate way. And there's no weed to this. It's mine. He kept it. He was the original guy to open it out of the pack. And
yeah.
Found us several months back. We got it graded for him. And he's a lucky guy today.
Man, $300,000. Just one last question about the auction that's over. What about the Maddie card? Was that one consignor? That's a cute, that's a beautiful card.
That card came with, you know, it was from one consigner, but he consigned some other really nice items in the auction, including the 66 Topps USA Test Bobby Orr in an 8.5, PSA 8.5, and some of the Type 1 photographs that were in the auction. So it is a nice card, and you know, he did really well overall.
We are chatting with Brian Drent from Mile High Card Company. Matt Graney's in the house. I want to get into the discussion with both of you guys because, Brian, I mean, you're basically a vintage guy. I know you do, you know, deal with modern and ultra-modern at some point. Matt, you're more of a modern guy who deals once in a while with vintage.
Very true.
Now, we've talked about this, Brian, in the past. We've talked about these influences that Rico loves.
Yeah, right. I really get influenced.
And I have my feelings about them. We've talked about it many times about how some of these guys, in my opinion, are giving out bad information to young collectors. Some of them are good. Some of them are not so good. Matt,
can I just say, do they break the law?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, you can get on there and influence.
I guess they don't. Too. You're right.
No, I was just saying. I'm not saying it's great.
But is it ethical to be on someone's payroll and to shill a product to little kids from that person?
That's not illegal, is it?
No, I guess
so,
it isn't.
You know, if I hire you to go on,
no, I agree. Blog, no, you're right. Just what are your thoughts, Matt?
I think there's a lot of good information in the industry and a lot of bad. And unfortunately, the newer people coming in can't really distinguish between the two, right? Yeah. You go online, you have 100,000 followers, people are going to think you're legitimate.
Mm. Brian?
Yeah, I think that's right on point. I mean, a lot of these guys definitely have a lot of followers, but they have their own agenda rather than the good of the industry. And once their own agenda comes into it, obviously it's tied to their wallet. So like he said, when you have a lot of, you know, followers, people are going to think there's obviously a legitimate element there. And sometimes there's not.
Brian, in your auctions today, over the last year, what percentage of your inventory is modern and ultra modern in your auctions?
Oh gosh. I mean, depending on where we call what we call modern, I wouldn't think it would be anywhere more than 10 to 12%.
Really? Now, Matt, your inventory is
exact opposite.
Right? Exact opposite. Now, you know, we only have a couple of minutes left in this segment. I want to get into, when we come back from the break, I want to get into, you made some good points, you and I speaking on the phone, and there is a lot of good in the modern and ultra-modern market.
There is.
A lot of good. And you're going to show us some of the things. We have a couple of minutes. Sure. Like, give us an example of what a good investment would be for a modern card.
Now or after the break?
No.
All right. So there is, as we discussed, manufactured rarity in a lot of the modern cards.
Manufactured rarities.
And since he just brought up Ichiro, that there...
Yep, hold it up to the camera.
...would be a Topps Dynasty Ichiro 1-of-1. Now, what the Topps Dynasty is famous for, they take jerseys and create really high-end patches. You can't create any more jersey once the player retires. So getting these types of patches... Joey Votto.
Yeah, beautiful.
I chase the retired players. Ryan Sandberg.
Okay, but so is this a good investment or a bad investment? Now, I'm going to play the devil's advocate.
Of course.
This is a Topps, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm shilling this card, and I'm saying, hey, guys, this is a one-of-one. You may want to consider buying this card for whatever. And you can hold on to it, or you can flip it, and you're going to make a lot of money. But I'm selling this card for Topps, and I'm making a recommendation. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, in a way. They just can't make any more jerseys.
So you're saying that's a legit one-of-one?
Yes, and there will be others like it, but once his player-worn jerseys run out, there's no more high-end Ichiro 101 patch autos, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
the problem there, Matt, is they can obviously go out and buy an Ichiro jersey, and here's the point that's the problem, if you will. They don't even need to buy an Ichiro jersey. They could buy another Mariners jersey.
Oh, 100%.
Wow. I never even thought of that, Brian.
Can I say something? Years ago, 10 years ago, let's say, from Topps, no, it might have been from one of the other companies, I signed 3,000 of these cards, right? I was batting or whatever.
Yeah.
And on the side was a uniform.
Yours?
Supposedly mine, but
what do? They took 3,000 different
cards? How
are
they going to get mine? What are you, yeah, that's what I mean.
See, he's making a good point. That could have been Yaz's. Right.
But this is different.
Yeah.
This is different because, you know, not just me. I'm sure they did Hall of Famers, too, and all that. And, you know, and people bought them. And
so if I cut the top of this collar off,
yeah,
can we make some money with it?
Yeah, right.
You know, guys, I don't begrudge anybody, and I absolutely appreciate anybody that makes their living doing what we do. I really do, and I have a great deal of esteem for anybody that's in this and has been in this business for whether they're selling vintage, whether they're selling modern. But it's an interesting thing. I'm obviously more of a vintage guy. It's what I've cut my teeth on. It's what I know. That said, I don't. I'm not a person that looks down upon modern and ultra modern. I just don't know if I have my point of view as to it being a good investment.
We are chatting with Brian Drent from Mile High and Matt Graney from My Slabs. We're going to get into this a little more.
Oh yeah,
Matt, honestly, I know based on my conversations with you. You make good sense on both sides of the fence.
I have to.
When we come back.
Yeah, I know. Hang in there. We're going to be right back with a Gax blast from the past.
Can't wait.
We'll
can
be right
you?
Back.
Since 1996, Brian Drent and the staff at Denver's Mile High Card Company have led the charge in the collectibles hobby. Mile High is a full-service dealer specializing in buying and selling cards and offers a competitive consignment program for all collectors. Whether it be their computerized want list service, appraisals, or auction services, Mile High has it all. If you've been searching for a company with a selection of high-grade vintage 1888 to 1970 baseball cards and memorabilia that shares your passion, aim high, Mile High. Go to milehighcardco.com or call 303-840-2784 for more information.
This is Brian Drent, president of Mile High Card Company. Is your sports card and memorabilia collection properly insured? For easily replaced personal property, homeowners insurance is all most people need. But for prized possessions that you may have spent a lifetime collecting, it doesn't go nearly far enough. Collectibles Insurance Services has been insuring for over 50 years. They offer a full range of protection and a $0 deductible at an affordable rate with no appraisals required. I know because they insure my collection. If you have a minute, go to collectinsure.com and learn more about insuring your personal card or memorabilia collection.
Hi, this is Dan from Memory Lane Auctions here to remind you that the renowned Memory Lane Collectibles Company has served as a beacon of light to the collecting community for the past several decades. Indeed, folks, it has been our utmost privilege and pleasure to provide the most enthusiastic collectors with an abundance of the finest sports cards and memorabilia for America's most coveted sports personalities via our world-class auctions. Whether you choose either a private sale transaction or the auction route, Memory Lane cordially invites you to reach out to us to maximize the value of your prized possessions. Also, it is not just sales that we pride ourselves on being the best of the rest, because if you are seeking a particular keepsake for your esteemed gathering, we will be relentless in our quest to find that special piece to fulfill your collecting dreams. So no time to wait. Reach out to us today for the purposes of capitalizing on our unparalleled marketing capabilities. Simply pick up the phone and dial 877-606-5263. That's 877-606-LANE 5263. or find us on the World Wide Web at www.memorylaneinc.com. Now is the time for your valued consignment to ultimately become another one of Memory Lane's record-setting prices.
How would you like to own the bat that was used by your favorite player when he hit that towering home run or game-winning base hit? Now look no further than JT Sports, specializing in the sale and authentication of professional game-used bats. As the official authenticators of professional model game-used bats for PSA DNA, JT Sports will guarantee the authenticity of any bat purchased from them. JT Sports also buys and sells game-worn uniforms, gloves, and baseball equipment. The unique quality of the collectible is what JT Sports is all about. Give them a call at 609-487-8003 or check them out at gameusedbats.com.
Okay.
We're back. We are back. And it is time now.
Yes.
For a Gax blast from the past.
Gax.
What the Great American Gax? Collectible Show.
Yeah, I don't know. But still, it sounds like a little animal from
what do you
Australia.
Want to, what do you name it? Sounds like a little animal from Australia.
Go ahead.
All right. So anyway, it is time for a Gax blast from the past. Now, we're going to go back in time. Because you and I have had many, many discussions about this.
Are you talking to me?
Oh, yeah. This is the famous brawl.
Brawl.
The brawl with the Yankees, between the Yankees and the Red Sox. And when you watch this, Matt, I want you to look at this. Petrocelli and Pepitone are really the two guys that instigated this brawl. I want you to pay close attention. Joe Foy got hit. Who was the other guy? Tillotson? Who was the guy that did a Lomborg hit?
Yeah, Tillotson.
Tillotson gets hit. But when they brawl, I want you to pay close attention to who initiates the brawl. Let's give a look.
It's Foy, watch.
Bang. Joe Foy.
Good thing it hit the top of his helmet. Watch, he starts
to first. And he and Lomborg are exchanging words now. And some of the Yankees are starting to come out of the dugout just as Sepper saw. Ralph Hoff, Joe Pepitone, now Joe Foy's in it.
So there's Pepitone.
Umpires are converging as Foy went over to get towards Tillotson. The Yankee ball.
Now watch Petrocelli. Petrocelli, look at him. He's yelling. There he is. They're holding him back. There he goes. And there goes Petrocelli.
The bottom of the pile.
Bottom of the pile. Petrocelli and Pepitone. Right?
And I grabbed this wig.
But look at Rico. They have a headlock on him.
That is... Petrocelli that you saw there in that close-up shot.
He's the only one named. I was mad. Somebody said something behind Petrocelli.
Well, we're gonna ask you that question.
Thad Tillotson, hit by a long board pitch, said something to him, and Tillotson, of course, had hit Foy, and then Foy started saying something, and you could see some of the Yankees coming out, and from that point on, it started.
Good enough. Now,
Smith had a base hit last time.
Yeah, you can. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you definitely were the instigator.
I was. I tell you,
what was said to
first
you?
Of all, something happened at Fenway. There was a problem. I think Foy hit a home run to win the game, or something like that. And so he comes up, he hits him right in the top of the helmet, and somebody said something. As we were coming together, somebody behind Pepitone was yelling at Lomborg that he said you could have ruined his
career.
His career, Tillotson's career. He got hit in the back. How about Foy? I said, Tillotson, you there? Then we went at it.
Now, You and Pepitone knew each other.
Yeah, yeah. People think it was he and I.
Well, it was.
Well, not directly. But
now, did you?
He got mad because I got his wig.
Did you take it right off his head?
Yeah, I took it. I took his in his dryer. He was the first guy to have a hair dryer too.
Brian, you were probably too young to remember that brawl. Watch it tomorrow night, though. It's hysterical. Rico is in the bottom of this scrum. Some guy's got him in a headlock. It was very, very, very funny. All right. I want to ask Matt this question. Rico brought up on your
website.
You have a Mike Trout, 2011 Tops update, Mike Trout. Yeah. And it's a buy or an offer for $5,000.
Right.
Now, is this a good investment? And the reason being is how many of these are out there?
I actually gave you the wrong number. I checked the PSA cert, which you can do through our website, by the way. That's a POP 85. So that means there's 85 PSA 10s.
Okay, so there's 85 PSA 10s.
Yes.
Now, you probably won't get $5,000 for it, but you may get $3,000 for it, whatever it is.
Right.
Now, what's the difference between this and another PSA 10 Mike Trout card? Give me a for instance.
That was, well, they have a what they call a base card, the one you open up in random packs, like you'd get out of your hobby shop.
How many of those?
There's over 20,000 PSA 10s.
So 20,000 PSA 10s on a regular Mike Trout, and there's only 85 of these. So something like this could be a good investment.
It could. It's all about when you buy and when you sell, right? So you never – he's had kind of – I don't want to say his time in the industry because he's a monster and a first ballot Hall of Famer. But those cards were much more expensive a couple of years ago when everybody was promoting him as, you know, the greatest thing.
Now, Bri, when you
– Yeah, sure.
Let's pick a card that you recently sold. When you feature a modern card in your auction – do you pay attention to how many there are out there and all of that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely do our research for the terms of our description. But I, you know, personally, I just don't look at it from the same viewpoint as maybe some others. And that's okay. We've talked about it before. This hobby allows for everybody to collect what they enjoy. And a lot of people, that's their avenue. You know, we sold some modern cards. Obviously, we had the Jordan precious metal gems that sold for $304,000. And we had a couple other modern cards. This auction didn't have a lot, but we had a card that caught my attention, and I knew it was a good card. We had a 2015-16 exquisite collection endorsements, rookie relics, of Connor McDavid. Now there's 50. That was number 43 of 50. And it was a BGS 9.5, a 10 on the auto. And it sold for $7,080 really well.
That's really interesting. You know, again, I'm a vintage guy. And I know. I've always looked at it as, for me personally, my collection, I look at it, I collect for the love of it, but I also look at it as an investment portfolio. Nice. I mean, that's what I've always
Especially
done.
Especially vintage.
Everyone does.
But, right? Certainly that.
Go
ahead.
No, we're discussing vintage and modern, right? But for me, what gets me angry as an amateur, as you know, coming on the show, in the middle, vintage, modern, what about these cards in the middle? We don't talk to me again.
80s, 90s?
No, 50s, 60s. You know, at least, especially in the 50s, where a lot of the great players, you know, started their careers.
Well, that's a good point, Brian. You know, like the K-lines of the world.
Yeah, I mean, Clemente.
Frank Robinson.
I vintage 75 and back. Some people have gone all the way to 89 and back, cutting it. Griffey's 89 Upper Deck. I mean, maybe I've been doing this too long, but that seems a little too forward for me. But, you know, 50s and 60s is definitely vintage. I mean, don't worry about it, Rico. You're vintage.
I don't mean that. Not me, but I'm talking about.
You're talking about the values of the cards?
Well, you know, I played against these guys and people who were alive at the time, you know, fans of them, they were the heroes. I mean, yeah, and also you want to, you know, you want to keep the value of the card up, then you want to see it grow, you know, the value. But it's vintage. Okay, I can understand vintage. Now, some modern, some.
And then you get the stuff in the middle.
And then the stuff in the middle, which to me in the 50s would make
and 60s,
the man.
And early 60s.
Yeah. Oh,
So Brian, to piggyback with what Rico's saying, I mean, yes. We look at a T206 Cobb. We look at a 33 Gaudi, Ruth, Gehrig, a Playball, DiMaggio. Those cards, and we've talked about this, those are all finite quantities of cards. I mean, there aren't, I think they're all probably out there. Question is with the other modern, more modern cards that Rico's talking about, the 50s and 60s, Louis Aparicio, Al Kaline, any one of those guys, they're not as popular or as valuable as those other cards.
Can make a strong case, if not an overwhelming case, that the most popular decade of our industry and our hobby is the 50s.
It is.
So, I mean, look at the cards that were produced there. You have the 51 Bowman, Mays, and Mantle. You have obviously 52 Tops, Mantle, and Matthews, and Mays, and Jackie Robinson. The 50s is the backbone of our whole industry. Has been, is, and you know, aside from some people's thoughts, you know, probably will be going forward. And then the 60s follow closely behind, at least on the vintage side. You know, on the modern side, you'd have to make a case for how people view that side.
Brian, I mean, Matt, what do you collect?
I collect everything. To be clear, I buy and sell modern cards to reinvest in the blue chip cards.
For yourself.
Yes, absolutely. And there is some stuff I do keep. Like this, for example. I understand his point in saying that these companies can go back out and buy jerseys that don't have to be authentic. Supposedly, you know, they have the authentication on every card. Some of them have the MLB little hollow certification, so you can look up the actual game. Something like
that would
this.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, what were you saying, Brian?
That would absolutely make me feel better if the MLB authentication was there.
Yes, and a lot of them do in this set. But he is correct. And quite frankly, you know, like these patch cards, not all patches are created equal. This here, Juan Soto 1/1, this is a World Series game-worn sleeve patch.
Mm.
Chances are there's never going to be anything, you know, at least not in the Nationals.
Did you do a lot? Did you do a lot of that with the patches? I know you said you signed 3,000. Was that pretty common back then?
Yeah, they were doing other players as well. Yeah, but see, it's not like this has design on it. This was just a piece of. In fact, it was like beige. Wait a minute. What,
all right. So when you had 3,000 cards in front of you, what did they have? A piece of fabric that they cut?
A piece of like a little square, you know?
That was with the card.
Not as big as this.
Yeah.
But it was, say, this big down, okay? Just that big. And it was, I mean, I'm signing, I'm getting a penny each, but that's what the heck.
Brian, what about on the other side of the coin, what about, how do we prove or how do they prove when you buy a Ty Cobb and there's a little piece of his bat in there? What's the provenance there?
No, it's a great question. Listen, we've sold cards in our auctions. Excuse me, not cards, but we've sold game used jerseys. We've sold bats that Topps and other companies have bought. And to their credit, like I remember one time we had a DiMaggio jersey, and it was a marginal DiMaggio jersey, if you will. It was something that got sent down to the minor leagues. The number was removed. You could see the number under black light, things of that nature. And so it wasn't a jersey that was going to sell for an overwhelming amount of money at the very top end. And fortunately, that's not the one that gets hacked up. So it was something that you knew they were going to put into a product with some DiMaggio things. Bats, again, I'm not sure. But I will tell you, to kind of move the discussion a different way, I picked up on what Matt said, and he said that he sells, deals in modern cards and reinvests in what he called was blue chip cards. And I think that's the perfect way to kind of categorize it. And I've always kind of thought of it my own. Modern and ultra modern are almost like tech stocks. And the vintage material is seemingly more like blue chip stocks.
You know, the stuff 100%. You guys are talking about, there's a lot of collectors watching. I think it's great stuff. If I was a collector now, I would take this information
absolutely.
And then, you know, use it and to increase my, you know,
portfolio.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I agree. But then, you know, on the other side of the coin, both Matt and Brian, I've made some pretty crappy purchases myself.
I'm not too surprised about that.
I bought some vintage stuff that I thought was going to be a home run.
Well, that's the thing.
You know, and lost $10,000. I lost $8,000 on it.
But that's like a stock. You can put money in the stock exchange and do the same thing.
Because you know what I do, Brian? Sometimes I don't buy modern to buy vintage. I buy vintage to buy vintage. So I've always done that. All so right. I'll buy a piece of vintage, either a vintage card or something that I'm really not interested in, but I know it's got some value, and then I'll try to flip that card in order to buy the piece that I really want.
Yeah, yeah.
I've gotten burnt a couple of times.
Yeah, but
case with it. Or Nolan Arenado is one of my favorite players, especially when he was a Rocky and now he's a Cardinal. Interestingly, yesterday we had a guy that was bidding in our auctions. I didn't know him. He had won some items and was from Southern California. And he had called. I was talking to him. He bought some nice items. And he told me that he owned car dealerships. And he said he was originally from Boston and he lives out in Southern California. And he said he deals in cards and cars. And but he said it with your guys, the way you guys talk. And so anyway, he said that his nephew was the second greatest Rocky of all time. And I said, well, if you're from Southern California, that must mean your nephew's Nolan Arenado. And he said it was. And I said, well, you're absolutely, in my opinion, you're wrong. You may think Todd Helton is, but I still think Nolan Arenado is the best Rocky that there was. But anyways, to move the point, he owned car dealerships and he'd done it for a long time and he buys stuff and he makes mistakes, you know, and overpays for a vehicle and realizes sooner than later, hey, this wasn't my best deal. I got to move it, cut my losses, and get on to the next
one. That makes all the sense. I've done that a few times.
It's serious. Than what I do or what we do in this business.
You've done that, Matt, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. Matt is in the house. Matt Greeny from My Slabs. Brian Drent from Mile High Card Company. Rico Petrocelli from GAX.
Yeah, I'm a GAC.
Hang in there. We'll be right back.
Pristine Auction is a family-owned and operated online auction specializing in autographed memorabilia, sports cards, coins, art, and collectibles. Since their founding in 2010, they've grown to two facilities in Phoenix, Arizona, totaling over 60,000 square feet. Jared Cavalli and an incredible staff of over 150 team members serve a very large customer base and enjoy every minute of it. By working with leading authentication companies, Pristine ensures all items are 100% authentic. In addition, third-party authenticators regularly travel to Pristine Auction to provide authentication services on-site. Pristine Auction strives to operate its business in a way that's honoring to God, their families, and their customers. With a strong focus on speed, quality, and premier customer service, their mission is to be the leading online auction for every level of collector and fan. Pristine also works for Hope Sports and Identity Hoops International, traveling to Mexico to build houses for the less fortunate. Pristine Auction offers several online auction formats with thousands of auctions ending each day. For more information, go to pristineauction.com. That's Pristine Auction, the best in the business.
If you're a discerning collector interested in owning the most important pieces in the hobby, look no further than Leland's Auctions. the original sports auction and appraisal house, Leland's was established in 1985 by legendary Pioneer founder Joshua Leland Evans. And today, President Mike Hefner carries on the tradition. From the Tom Brady card and memorabilia collection to the famed Boston Garden auction to high-end card auctions from every major sport, Leland's has always maintained the highest standards. Go to Leland's.com and get your bid in. That's Leland's, the hobby's leading sports auction house for four decades.
It's often been said that championships are won on the practice field, and world records come only to those willing to work harder than everybody else. Heritage Auctions is the world's largest collectibles auctioneer because we believe that becoming the best is only an invitation to the challenge of remaining the best. This requires the skills of the hobby's top experts, capable of identifying and maximizing value for our consigners. It requires the most visited website in the industry, courting a global audience of collectors over 1.5 million strong. It requires a dedicated press department that expands our global reach far beyond the entrenched hobby marketplace. It's hard work, but a simple premise. Present the finest collectibles to the largest population of potential buyers, and world records will come. We invite all listeners to put the unmatched power of Heritage Auctions to work for you. Auction evaluations are always free, and our commission-based fee structure ensures that our interests are always aligned. Highest possible price for your collectibles. There will always be new world records to chase, so let's chase them together. Visit our website at ha.com and request your no obligation review today.
Hi, this is Dan from Memory Lane Auctions here to remind you that the renowned Memory Lane Collectibles Company has served as a beacon of light to the collecting community for the past several decades. Indeed, folks, it has been our utmost privilege and pleasure to provide the most enthusiastic collectors with an abundance of the finest sports cards and memorabilia for America's most coveted sports personalities via our world-class auctions. Whether you choose either a private sale transaction or the auction route, Memory Lane cordially invites you to reach out to us to maximize the value of your prized possessions. Also, it is not just sales that we pride ourselves on being the best of the rest, because if you are seeking a particular keepsake for your esteemed gathering, we will be relentless in our quest to find that special piece to fulfill your collecting dreams. So no time to wait. Reach out to us today for the purposes of capitalizing on our unparalleled marketing capabilities. Simply pick up the phone and dial 877-606-5263. That's 877-606-LANE. Or find us on the World Wide Web at www.memorylaneinc.com. Now is the time for your valued consignment to ultimately become another one of Memory Lane's record-setting prices.
Hey, I'm Mike Petroselli. If your company is looking for the best in marketing and promotional items, you'll hit a home run with Petroselli Marketing. With over 8,000 suppliers and 650,000 imprint-ready items, we can get your company the visibility it needs to get your maximum exposure. Whether it be office promotions, wearables, automotive, sports items, and everything in between, Petroselli Marketing can do it all. Our design staff will even work with you from concept to delivery and customize your products. At Petroselli Marketing Group, we will get your brand in front of your audience. Contact us at info@PetrocelliMKT.com or call us at 603-880-3202. That's Petroselli Marketing, where no dream is impossible.
Yes. By the way, this is my son, I'll be honest.
Look at this.
Yeah, I gave him a Petroselli.
Finally.
But, you know, the promotional items.
Brian, he finally gave me a Petroselli Marketing pen.
Game
news.
Give the kid a call, will you? Because the father's, is on Social Security.
Yeah, the father's on Social Security, all right. Brian, kid, you should see his Social Security checks from the Red Sox.
Yeah, nothing.
Get out of here.
Yeah, right.
All right.
I have a friend retired, and he said, you know, we were dickering over a deal, and he was going to buy something. And he, you know, he's a little bit older than me, retired. And he said, he's a well-to-do guy. He said, keep in mind, I'm retired. I'm on a fixed income. And thing he said. Good news.
Yeah, really. This guy, he's the only guy I know that can go to a ball game, watch the ball game for three innings, eat three hot dogs, get paid $4,000, and he walks out the door.
It's not true. You the know, only guy you know, I know he's not true.
Yeah, the only guy I know that can do that.
No.
All right, it is time for our segment On Deck with Rico, brought to you by our good friend Brian Dwyer and the great staff at REA Auctions. Don't forget to get your bid in by going to RobertEdwardAuctions.com. That's Robert Edward Auctions for extraordinary results and extraordinary service.
He answered a tough question. On Deck with Richard Pasticelli.
On Deck with Richard
Pasticelli. Right.
That kills me. All right. This is a good question.
Is it?
This was submitted by Mr. Wayne Peters.
Wayne Peters, Wayne.
Rico, doesn't sound what adjustments did you make to turn into a power hitter? Now, you were a slap hitter when you started.
No, but I had power, but I just didn't hit the ball enough. But anyway, I gained 20 pounds. Seriously, I was 165. That year, I went to 185.
By design?
It just happened. Oh, okay. It happened. You know, we couldn't lift weights. We had to do the chin-ups and all that stuff. That plus steroids, amphetamines, coffee. Drank a lot, 4 or 5 cups of coffee.
No, stop it.
You couldn't.
How did you?
I just got stronger. I felt great.
Did you make any adjustments to your stance?
No, nothing. However, and this is for all rookies, I started laying off what they were trying to do, throw it in the dirt, you know, little sliders in the dirt, curveballs in the dirt. I used to chase my first couple of years. Now I was taking. That's a ball. Now 2-0. You know, here comes a better pitch to hit, and bang.
Yeah, but you were driving at the beginning. Weren't you driving a lot to right field? Yeah, and then all of a sudden, off the wall.
Yeah, I was – right. Yeah, because I told you, Pete Reynolds, look at the distance in Fenway. 420 to right center, 380 to right, 310, 360. It's just – He says, "What would you rather do?" I says, "Yeah, I like that wall."
Oh, great!
So anyway, yeah, but
you did become. I mean, you had some pretty good seasons.
Some good, some not so good. But you know,
was that the same year you went 0-32?
No, that was my rookie year. Oh. Yeah, I went 0-32.
By the way, what about Bobby Dalbec? That kid, what a mess! What a mess he is right now. He's 0-32, Rick.
Wow.
0-32.
I got to call him. I know. I got to call.
All right, listen, we are chatting with Brian Drent from Mile High and Matt Graney from Ice Labs. All right, I'm going to ask you guys both this question. Brian, you first. What are your thoughts on the PSA-SGC merger?
Wow, I've been asked a lot about it. It's still, it's still something I'm not 100% sure. I think it's going to be great for our business overall. I truly believe that PSA will just let SGC, run on their own autonomously. And then we'll see how it plays out. But I think it's exciting. I would love to see a joint set registry. But overall, I think it's an interesting move. But overall, good for our business.
So what about, if I may ask, what about, I'm a collector, and I've used SGC and PSA in the past. SGC's grading standards from an investment standpoint and the value of a card, their grading, an SGC 4 is not equivalent to a PSA 4. So is that going to affect anything as far as the grading on SGC's part? Are they going to raise their standards to meet PSA's?
I actually would disagree. I think SGC's grading standards are every bit as difficult as PSA's, and in some instances more difficult. I think a lot of people may feel otherwise just because PSA owns a greater market share. Maybe they think that's the the most difficult or the most you know, introspective into a card and the toughest grades. But believe me, SGC is just every bit as tough, like I said, and sometimes a little bit tougher. So I don't think there's anything to deal with the standards being substandard to PSA.
Matt?
I would actually agree with them. I've owned high-end copies of SGC, PSA, same card, yeah. You know, vintage stuff. Typically, the SGC has better eye appeal. Maybe it's just because I actively chase the more centered stuff. But I don't really see that much of a disparity in the two grading scales.
Yeah, but
modern's a little bit different.
I'm not really maybe you guys are missing my point. I'm not talking about the grading skills. I'm talking about the value of the card. So my point, and Brian, I'm directing this to both of you.
Sure.
I'm saying that if SGC grades something and it comes out at a 4,
yep.
And PSA grades a card, the same card, and comes out at a 4, the PSA card is worth more than the – that's a fact, isn't it, Brian?
It seems to be that the PSA card will sell for a little bit more. I will tell you, in the recently concluded auction that we had Saturday night, we had a 65 Pete Rose in a PSA 8, and we had a 65 Pete Rose in a SGC 8, and the SGC 8 outpaced the PSA.
Wow, that's,
and,
good. You know, that's good to know.
Yeah. The card – it was a nicer card. It looked better. And it looked better also with the black border, the tuxedo, if you will.
Yeah.
But and I think, you know, with PSA or collectors owning both companies, maybe that gap closes a little bit. And maybe, just maybe, there's a room for investors or somebody thinking that they're going to make a little bit of money, because if they do get a combined set registry, I haven't heard anything of it, but if that happens and you can put SGC cards on your PSA or yeah, combined registry, I think the prices of SGC cards will accelerate.
We got about 3 minutes.
No, here. I was just going to say it's important for collectors to be hearing this.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? The companies, of course, well, plus the fact they don't want to make one company because of
monopoly.
That's right. You know the game, Monopoly?
Yeah, but you got some other companies out there. But, you know, that's the other thing. I think we only have about a minute and a half left. But I think the other thing here is that class action suits, you know, I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I wouldn't shock me if one of the lesser companies try to, you know, get a bunch of them together and you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to represent 96% of the market.
Won't, but still.
Yeah. You know. All right, Brian, when is your next auction?
Our next auction is going to be August into September, and we'll be at the Strongsville show next week in Ohio, accepting consignments, buying, and then not myself, but my staff will be at the show, which used to be the Altman show and is now Lucky.
Lucky, yeah.
Yep, the following week in Boston. I'm going to take a little well-deserved vacation. And but we'll be there, and then before you know it, Nash.
Yeah, we're not going to be unfortunately, I'm not going to be at the Wilmington show in April. We're going to be out in San Francisco visiting my grandchildren.
Nice.
So looking forward to that. And Brian, looking forward to Brian. You're going to be up on stage with us for a little while, right? For the you know, we got to get you up on stage again. We have a good time with that crew. You and Joe Orlando and the rest of them. We'll have some fun with that.
Make sure Grady's there.
Grady's got to be there. I mean, are you kidding? It doesn't work without Grady. Matt, your website address?
www.myslabs.com.
Are you going to be at the National?
I should be.
Don't cheap out.
We have a lot going on. We're currently trying to get an auction product out to the public. Next 60 days, hopefully, so I should be freed up for the National.
How many partners? One? Two?
We have several partners, just myself and one other of the majority equity holders.
And I'll tell you what, you make me proud. You've been doing this now for a while, know what you're doing, and it's good for the town of Amesbury.
Thank you very much.
With that being said, Mr. P,
folks,
say hi to Elsie.
Nice to see you. Wonderful
nice to see
meet
you. Again.
Anything
great.
Else?
Brad,
go Red Sox. They suck, but that's okay. Red go Red Sox.
Don't worry. It's a long season.
I know. Brian, we'll talk to you later. And to our viewers and listeners, thank you all for your support. Chrissy, great job as usual. Love your hair. And with that being said, happy collecting.
The views and opinions expressed by the hosts, guests, or callers of this program do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the Studio 21, Podcast Cafe, the United Podcast Network, its partners or affiliates.